Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us, hopefully very, very soon, Mr. Paul Williams, who has been a professor teaching at Eastern universities. He is a consultant to the intelligence agencies. He's written a couple of books, which we carry. One is called Osama's Revenge. The other is called The Al-Qaeda Connection. And actually, we think both of these are very important books. They'll give you some idea into the background of the mentality of the people who are within this Islamic movement that threatens the very structure of American society today. Now, we can go into the background, and those of you who've listened to our programs regularly know that we feel that certainly through the years, why many times this radical Islamic movement had help from our own intelligence agencies, but that was then and now is now. And the question is there a threat to America? Well, this last weekend I happened to be at a meeting in another state where there were a number of people gathered. Some of them were experts. One of them works in the White House. And I had the opportunity to ask him what we were going to do to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And as he danced around the subject, it was very obvious we're considering going to war with Iran. There was a gentleman there from the Project for the New American Century, this small group of 25 people who really controlled the background to our foreign policy. And those of you who don't know the Project for the New American Century, I suggest you go to their website at newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org, and read all of the material that they have there. If you don't have access to the information, we do have a packet on the New American Century. We can make available to you if you're interested, and you can always call us at 1-800-544-8927. But this gentleman, I simply asked, would we be at war with Iran within 12 months? And after dancing around the subject and saying, well, we'd really like to try to avoid war, maybe we could topple the government, or but it was very obvious that war is being seriously considered. Well, with that as a background, we want to get to our special guest this evening because he's really an expert on what's going on. He studied the Al-Qaeda movement. He studied Osama bin Laden. He's really one of the world's leading experts on Osama. And we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening. Paul Williams. Good evening, Mr. Williams. How are you tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, of course, fascinating. One of the things that was brought up, I'd never heard of this before, but I've often wondered why it is that the president of Iran appears to be doing everything possible to provoke an attack, a Israeli attack, an American attack, almost to justify the feelings of many people in the West that we're going to have to do something about the totally irresponsible people in Iran, because we couldn't allow them to have the finger on a nuclear trigger. And somebody had mentioned some sort of a sect over there, almost like a doomsday sect, belief in this idea that the only way we're really going to bring the Mahdi back, the leader of the Muslim world, is to bring about a cataclysmic war. Yeah. Are you acquainted with that philosophy?
Oh, sure I am. Sure I am. It's an ideology and a belief that's inherent in the Shiite movement. The return of the prophet after the death of the last righteous prophet, who was the fourth caliph of Islam. So yeah, and they're looking forward to the Mahdi, and the Mahdi will come, of course, from the family of the prophet. He will be a figure from the end time. He will have a prominent nose. He will be a figure who will be who will unite both the Sunnis and the Shiites and all the Muslims in one great jihad against the West, and he'll bring forth the Day of Islam. Osama bin Laden now is calling himself Osama Mohammed bin Laden, so he's starting to identify himself with the Mahdi.
And I think for our listeners out there, the Mahdi would be he would be the leader of the Muslim world. He would be sort of the Christian, like Jesus Christ to the Jew, the Messiah to the Hindu, Maitreya. They honestly believe that they can bring this about, at least what I'm told, that they're going to have cataclysmic events to actually precipitate his return. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, that is a fair statement, yeah. And once again, from Iran right now, that's exactly what we're hearing, you know, more and more and more about the return of the last prophet and preparations for the Mahdi. And we're involved, as you know, Dr. Stan, in a religious war, and it's kind of mind-boggling that these events are taking place in our time, in the age of the so-called post-Christian era.
Hold that thought there for just a moment. Sure. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us is Paul Williams. Paul was simply saying, as you know, he's been a professor. He lectures to intelligence people. He's a consultant for our various intelligence agencies. He is a prolific writer, having written two books we carry and we recommend. One, Osama's Revenge. The other, The Al-Qaeda Connection. Both of them just packed full of all sorts of fascinating information. But we were just talking about the Shia Muslim belief that there will be coming a Mahdi. The Mahdi would be the Christian, the return of Jesus Christ. To the Egyptian, the Mahdi would be the return of the prophet. But before he's going to come, there's going to be terrible cataclysmic events and times. The tragedy is that many of these people believe that they're going to have to create these terrible times to bring the Mahdi back. And of course, Osama bin Laden apparently has been calling himself Osama Mohammed bin Laden, identifying himself with Muhammad the Prophet. So with that as a background, pick this story up there, because I think it's so vitally important for our listeners to understand we're not dealing with rational people.
Well, right now, the followers of bin Laden are greeting him when they see him. And we know this from the night letters that are being circulated throughout Pakistan. They greet him and they speak to him as the awaited enlightened one. That's a title that can only be bestowed upon the Mahdi. And the Mahdi in Shia belief is more than a mighty warrior or even a religious leader. He is the rightly guided caliph, the last caliph, who will appear in the last days of human history. And his coming is foretold by the Hadith, the collection of sacred writings that supplement the Quran. And in such writings, he's depicted as a prophet who will appear at a time when the Muslims are oppressed, Dr. Stan, throughout the world. And he will unite all the believers to fight off the vast army of the oppressors, the army of the infidel unbelievers, who will be led, according to their belief, by the Dabbath, or the beast, And he will unite all of the Muslims in war and bring forth the Day of Islam. And that's a day when people throughout the world, believers and non-believers alike, will all fall in forced submission before the will of Allah. And at that point, after the Day of Islam, justice will be restored, according to these people, throughout the world, through the imposition of Sharia on all nations. And like I said, the Mahdi will be descendant of Muhammad through his daughter Fatima. He will have the same name as the prophet, and that's why Osama is calling himself Osama Mohammed bin Laden. and is he'll have certain distinctive features: a prominent nose, which Osama of course has; a black mole on his face, which Osama of course has. He'll be known for his generosity and his altruism, and these are characteristics of Osama bin Laden, at least according to his followers. He'll arise from Arabia, from Saudi Arabia, no other Muslim land, and that's where bin Laden is from. And he'll be called from a cave by Allah to serve as a savior for all believers. And once again, you know, if you put all the pieces together, you can see the way that that the followers of Osama believe that he is the Mahdi, and you can see how this resurgence of the belief in the Mahdi has taken hold of the leaders and the mullahs in Iran. And that's, believe it or not, that's really what's happening.
Yeah, and of course the thing is that the people in the West really don't understand that the whole Muslim world is uniting in opposition specifically to Israel and America, the great Satan. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, Dr. Stan, as you know, there are 1 billion Muslims in the world. Three-quarters of them, according to surveys conducted by Gallup, by Pew, the leading polls throughout the world show that three-quarters of them support the jihad and have a virulent hatred of the United States.
And, of course, it wasn't this way a few years ago. You know, back in 1991, I think there was a lot of goodwill towards America after the 9/11 attack. But all of that has changed, hasn't it?
It has changed radically. It began to change, and that's a good date to bear in mind. You know, the Persian Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein acquiesced, he believes, Kuwait. He believes that Kuwait gave him the shaft during the Iran-Iraq War, that he protected the Arab nations and got nothing in return. And he was correct there. And the Kuwaitis were stealing Iraqi oil and selling it, and he just moved in and he acquiesced and annexed Kuwait as part of Iraq. That started the Persian Gulf War. Of course, we became involved there for some unknown reason to me. It was a matter that strictly concerned the Arab nations. We became involved, and after that, we imposed sanctions on Iraq, which resulted in, according to the Muslims, the deaths of millions of Iraqi children and women and old people. It imposed incredible hardship on them. And all these things, of course, added a great deal of fire to the jihad.
And, of course, it's really, we have to ask, why did we do what we have done? There's a wonderful book written by Bob Woodward. I think it's called Six Presidents. Mm-hmm. And there, of course, he describes a meeting held in the Oval Office with Brent Scowcroft, James Baker III, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Colin Powell. And Baker wanted to go over and tell Saddam Hussein, you got to get out of Kuwait. If you don't get out of Kuwait, we're going to be forced to come and get you out. But get out now while you can. And of course, George Herbert Walker Bush is professed to have said, according to Bob Woodward, no, you can't go. You can't negotiate with Saddam Hussein. We have to have this war. We have to have this war. Anybody like to see those pages from the book, we'd be glad to send them. But why would you have to have the war? Why would you have to have the war back in 1991? And now, of course, here we are engaged in a war in Iraq, but the war drags on, and now we're talking about going to war with Iran, and none of this makes any logical sense unless there are other forces out there that are simply dragging us into this great confrontation with the Islamic world.
Dr. Stern, think about this. In 1991, why in the world did we send troops into Saudi Arabia and set up military installations between Mecca and Medina? That was against every tenet of Islam. That really stirred the pot to the boiling point. That's if you read the fatwa from Osama bin Laden, that was it. The installation of those permanent military facilities in Saudi land, in the land of the prophets, where nobody can live, of course. Nobody can be a citizen unless you're a Saudi. You can't be buried there unless you're a Saudi. You can't be a citizen unless you're a Saudi. You can't own a business there unless you're a Saudi. or even invest in a business there unless you're a Saudi. And yet we received all the warning signs that this was going to cause havoc. And yet George Walker Bush installed the military installations between the two holy cities, and that certainly added a great deal to the unrest that we're experiencing right now. But if you go back and you look at that situation in 1991, Dr. Stan, what were we doing? I mean, why did we go to war at that time? And I think, the only answer is, I mean, Saddam Hussein became presented as somebody worse than Hitler. He was accused of taking babies from hospitals, premature babies, and killing them. Later we found out that all these things were untrue. Saddam Hussein, as you know, and going back to 1980, was our ally. We supported him in the Iran-Iraq war. We gave him weapons. We propped him up. He was the savior of the Arab nations during the Iran-Iraq war. Saudi Arabia, all the Arab states supported him. At the end of the war, these Arab states demanded that he return all the money that they loaned him, plus an interest. They would not allow him to get a fair price on his own oil. They forced him into this situation where he had to react militarily, and we took action against Saddam Hussein only to make sure that the cheap oil would continue to flow into the United States from the Saudis. That's the only reason. No other reason.
Well, of course, now, all the things are coming together as we're facing the specter of a war with Iran. Now, of course, we just don't have enough troops to militarily attack that country. In fact, if we were to attack using missiles, and certainly cruise missiles, Tomahawk, planes, bombing, why, they could send some Iranian divisions into the southern part of Iraq and make it literally impossible for us to get out. They could create terrible havoc there, couldn't they? And that shouldn't be welcomed by the Shia Muslims.
It gets worse than that. In order to take out their facilities in Iran right now, the nuclear facilities, we would not only have to rely on Tomahawk missiles and Stingers and things like that, we'd have to employ some tactical nukes. I mean, that even came up in the Pentagon. And worse, there are over 200 sites throughout Iran that would require elimination. 200 sites, and they're scattered all over the place. So it's not like the Israelis taking out the nuclear facility in Iraq in 1981.
Wouldn't there be an awful lot of civilians killed as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, we are in literally an impossible situation. The average American doesn't really realize what the implications of this are. But if you want to inflame the entire Islamic world against the United States, you couldn't do a better job than we're doing right now. However, those of you who think that we're going to be able to sit over here comfortably without anything to be concerned about really need to read Paul Williams' book, The Al-Qaeda Connection. And we'll be getting into that in here in just a moment or two as we discuss the sleeper agents who are being welcomed into this country through our southern borders. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Paul Williams. And we were going to talk about the Al-Qaeda connection, about the Islamic men who are being allowed to come into our country across our southern border. And I really thought that really would be so fascinating. I was reading the section in your book today that talked about all of the people of special interest, these people who've been arrested down, trying to come into this country, and then promptly released. And the border agents down there, when they see these Arabs coming in, all with the same trim of the mustache, all wearing the same clothing, all speaking in Arabic, sneaking into our country, violating our laws, and they are apprehended, and then they are given a court hearing, and 95% of them never show up for the court hearing for deportation. And the agents on the border are saying, why are we bothering to stop them if we're ordered to let them loose? I would ask you the same question. Why are we even trying to stop the Islamic people, from many of them from terrorist countries, from coming into this country if our federal government orders that they immediately be released?
The situation, I've been there. Let me just tell you, like in Cochise County in Arizona, along that border with Mexico, right now, the people that are coming over, of course, create a mess. I mean, they litter the countryside like you wouldn't believe. But among the litter, the mounds and mounds of litter, on any given day, you will find Islamic prayer mats. You will find Arabic newspapers. You will find paid text from Arabic books. It's really a frightening situation. Since 2004, over 9,000 special interest aliens from terror-related countries, have been apprehended at the border. Caught. How many weren't caught? Only heaven knows. But as soon as they're caught, Dr. Stan, they're placed in hotels. Very comfortable hotels. They're given hearing dates to appear before an immigration judge. None of them show up for their hearing. They all just disappear into the heartland, and that's the end of it. But why they are apprehended, I don't know. It makes absolutely no sense. There's one woman, her name was Farida Ghulam. She was apprehended in 2004 in Texas. She traveled to an Al-Qaeda cell in New York City, boarded a plane in Texas, flew to New York, went back to Texas. She was visiting that cell to convey information about the next 9/11. When the Border Patrol arrested her in Texas, finally arrested her, she talked about flying from South Africa. She made her way from South Africa, from Saudi Arabia, flew from there to Mexico, and crossed the Rio Grande. And they asked her how many times she had done that. And they thought, well, if she did it two or three times, it would be alarming. Well, Farida Ghulam did not make this trip two or three times, not even 10 or 20 times. She had made that crossing in the last 5 years over 275 times before she was apprehended.
So she was doing it on a regular basis. Actually, she was a courier then. Whatever happened to you? Do you have any idea what happened?
Yeah, I know exactly what happens to them. They're placed at various detention facilities. There's some in Eastern Europe, as we know, but there are many detention facilities that the CIA has set up throughout the United States. There's one, as a matter of fact, in my backyard.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment as we discuss this incredible story with Mr. Paul Williams. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Paul Williams, and we're talking about what's happening to our southern border, and Paul was simply mentioning that since 2004, over 9,000 people of interest, these would be Arab nationalists, most of them or many of them from countries that support terrorism, have been apprehended on the border. They're put in comfortable hotels. They held an initial hearing, told to come back for a deportation hearing, and essentially none of them come back. Now, if we've apprehended 9,000 since 2004, probably there are tens of thousands more that have gotten in, have never been apprehended. And the thing is, why would you, people who could potentially be terrorists, most of the Mexicans coming in here are looking for work, but the Arabs who are coming in illegally across our southern border, some of them certainly are here as part of Al-Qaeda, setting up their sleeper cells, waiting for when the word is given for the attack on the United States. So why would you give them deportation hearing, a notification to come back, when they're not coming back? And I'm sure many of the agents working on the border are asking exactly that same question. And then Paul was telling a story about a woman who had actually was a courier. She had made almost 250 trips across the border. She was coming from Islamic countries, bringing information into the terror cells. And do you say that she is now being confined in one of these prisons somewhere in the world?
Oh, yeah. You see, the federal facilities right now, there's one, as I said, in northeast Pennsylvania, where several of these operatives are right now. They're held up in federal prisons throughout the country. And you know, they're given, but this is kind of amazing. And many of these facilities they become part of the general population, and they're talking. And, you know, if you know any guards at any of these facilities, you'd be amazed at the type of prisoners that are in, you know, many of these federal prisons right now, Al-Qaeda agents. But the woman I spoke about, Farida Ghulam, yeah, she's in a federal pen in the United States right now. I know where she is.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, do you think that they're setting up Al-Qaeda cells all across America for the time when we go to war with Iran?
Dr. Stan, the people that have crossed the border, let's just look at this. Your listeners can verify this for themselves. Just go to their search engines, type in special interest aliens or SIAs, and they'll get all oodles of Google information. They could read for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they will find that what we're talking about is the gospel truth. Over 9,000 since 2004 to the middle of 2005, and I'm taking this up recently, were apprehended and given hearing gates and disappeared. How many? These people, you got to realize, they're coming from places like Kuwait. They're coming from places like Saudi Arabia. If they're coming from Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, they're people who have some money. I mean, they're not traveling to Mexico and making that trek over the border to pluck chickens or to work in a fast food restaurant or to pick some crops. I'm sorry, that's not the reason they're here at all. They're not dressed up like Mexicans so that they can be migrant workers. They're here for some other reason.
And, Chris, we are actually giving large sums of money to Pakistan that has, I think, last thing I've read, about 55 terrorist training camps in it where Al-Qaeda terrorists are being trained today. And we're giving $660 million a year to Pakistan. Isn't there something wrong with that picture?
Well, let's take that a step further. How about all the Al-Qaeda training camps that still exist in Afghanistan, right in front of our troops? How about the poppy fields that are red right now and ripe for picking? I mean, we could firebomb them in one afternoon and do away with the funding for the jihad. But right now where our troops are, the heroin crops are flourishing as never before. The cultivation has increased threefold since Operation Enduring Freedom.
Now, why, in heaven's name, if we're really involved in a war with Islamic terrorism, are we allowing, of course, the poppy industry to persist, allowing, of course, Al-Qaeda to get the profits from that and sell it throughout the world, not only having a profound impact on the people of Europe and the United States, but acquiring the funds to fund the Islamic terrorist movement?
Well, the argument about that is if we firebombed or if we spread herbicides on that crop, the Afghan economy would collapse, which would mean havoc for the present government. You know, the government that we propped up there.
That sounds like a pretty good explanation. But when we're at war, when America is being threatened, you would think that we'd be more interested in stopping the funding for Al-Qaeda, wouldn't you?
We don't have any leadership, Dr. Stan. That's a problem.
We'll be back here in just a moment here with Paul Williams, his book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, and, of course, Osama's Revenge, both of which we carry, both of which you really need to read to get a grasp of what lies ahead here in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, one of the things that I've been rather loath to believe is that there really was going to be any more terrorist attacks in America. After all, it's been over 4 years, and there's not been a serious terrorist attack here in the United States. But after reading Paul's book and looking at his documentation, I have no question that Osama has been out there trying to acquire enriched uranium and other materials for building at least small tactical nuclear weapons. Osama is a brilliant individual. He's a trained engineer, and many of the Arabs really are highly trained. They're very capable. They are entirely capable of building a small nuclear weapon. They're not that complicated, but what you need is the enriched uranium. So would you like to pick up the story of there, how they've been working for really well over a decade and to acquire the nuclear material?
When Osama bin Laden moved to Sudan in 1992, he made his first score of highly enriched uranium. It came from a facility in Pretoria. From that time, he has been actively buying off-the-shelf nukes. He's been buying highly enriched uranium and plutonium to manufacture his own nuclear devices. And he has been involved in these undertakings, as you said, from the time he was in the Sudan in 1992 to the time he returned to Afghanistan in 1996 to 9/11. He has a small arsenal of nuclear weapons that he intends to use against the United States. He has said that. His lieutenants have said that. That has been verified by everybody that looked into this. Where Daniel Pearl was put, you know, that's the reason he died. He was looking at the connection between Osama bin Laden and Dr. A.Q. Khan and the Al-Qaeda nuclear arsenal. There's no doubt that Osama bin Laden has nuclear weapons. And on October the 11th, 2001, at the checkpoint at Ramallah, an Al-Qaeda operative was arrested with a backpack nuke strapped to his back. In the beginning, the Mossad thought it was a radiological device, but later discovered, and this was reported in newspapers throughout the world, that it was a tactical nuclear weapon capable of destroying all of Israel.
Now, what was the date of that?
October 11th, 2001, 1 month after 9/11. Reported on United Press International. There's another story that was written by Richard Sales. Richard Sales, by the way, is not only a very prominent and award-winning journalist for AP and UPI, he was also a CIA operative.
All right, well, just hang on, and we'll be back in just a moment here as we begin to explore what the implications are of nuclear weapons in the hands of Al-Qaeda terrorists. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're trying to point out that we're living in very, very perilous times, and a lot of things really don't seem to make any sense unless there are other forces at work that most people don't understand. And, of course, my contention, and I believe that Mr. Williams would agree with me, there are powerful spiritual forces that are at work as we are being moved towards some end-time scenarios. So, but let's get back. Mr. Williams was talking about how in October of 2001, a young man wearing a backpack was stopped at an Israeli checkpoint as he was trying to enter Israel. They actually were able to get the backpack away from him, and it contained a small tactical nuclear device. Well, I'll tell you what, when you're in Israel, why, you don't have to have a very large device to kill off or to destroy a large part of the country, because it's such a small country. Mm-hmm. And they actually found that in 2001. But the major danger to America would be small tactical nuclear devices. Now, we do know that during the Cold War, while the Russians built large numbers of suitcase bombs, but so did the United States. But the technology is certainly there for small tactical weapons of 50, 75, what, 100 pounds, somewhere there?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, there's sometimes people refer to these as suitcase nukes. They're not necessarily suitcase nuclear devices. Some of them can be formed into artillery shells and fired from like a 155-millimeter recoilless rifle mounted on a Jeep or from a howitzer. Some of them are mines. Some of them are backpack nukes. Matter of fact, most of the small tactical nuclear weapons that we used in the U.S. military and continue to deploy are called SADMS. And they were strapped to, they were called Davy Crockett's. And they were strapped to, like backpacks, they were fitted in backpacks, and they were used by the Navy SEALs, and they still are. They weighed about 60 pounds, as you say. You could parachute out of a plane, a SEAL could, land in the ocean, strap one to a bridge or to a port, and detonate it. And these have been around since the 1960s for a very long time. As a matter of fact, in the Soviet Museum in Moscow, the smallest nuclear device known to man is on exhibit, and it's the size of a fountain pen.
So, of course, the question is, could they bring them in the United States? Would they bring them into the United States? Or are they already here, ready to be deployed when the word is given?
Well, let's go to Time Magazine. I mean, we could talk about any Newsweek, Time, The Nation. I'll tell you one story. There was a Waziristan summit in 2004. At the end of that summit, and that was to discuss the next 9/11. According to the New York Times, the Washington Post, Time, and Newsweek, one operative, Al Masri, his name was collared. And he spoke about nuclear weapons that had been developed by Al-Qaeda and forward deployed to Mexico. And he said that these weapons had been successfully transported over the border. And I mean, anyone that doubts that, there's a story of Adnan El-Shukrijama, who's the next Mohammed Atta. He intended that Waziristan summit. He was trained in nuclear technology at McMaster's University in Hamilton, Ontario. Following that, Bolo came out, be on the lookout for Adnan El-Shukrijama. A $5 million reward was placed on his head by Attorney General Ashcroft and FBI Director Robert Mueller. Adnan El-Shukrijama traveled from Hamilton, Ontario to Buffalo. From Buffalo, he made his way to Denver. He was spotted at a Denny's restaurant there. From there, he made his way across the border into Mexico, down to Central America, where he met with jefes from Mara Salvatrucha, an El Salvadoran street gang. From that point on, he was seen in Sonora, Mexico, where he stole, according to the Mexican officials, a Piper crop duster. At the scene of the crime, he was seen loading some very suspicious crates, which people now believe were these nuclear weapons, onto this crop duster, and he was last seen in Bakersfield, California. As a matter of fact, Dr. Stan, I have reason to believe, and I received notification of this today and verification, that he's still there.
Well, if he's still there, why don't we pick him up?
Let me tell you something. I called up. Now, you have to realize I worked for the FBI for years. Not only did I work for the FBI, but I appeared as a leading witness at many of the pizza trials. I put many of the leading mafiosos in the slammer. I mean, I was a star witness. I not only worked behind a desk, I was working day and night with the FBI. One time I was taken into a warehouse, and my head was smashed like a melon on the concrete floor, so I lost most of my hearing. But in any case, the FBI knows me, and they know my work, and they know that what I say, if I'm putting people in the slammer, what I say is accurate. I never write anything without a footnote, as you know. They know that my information is salient. They know that I would never give a bad piece of information to anyone, especially about a matter this serious. I inform the authorities what's going on in Bakersfield right now, and I have yet to hear from them. And this goes on all the time.
And I think that if you look and see what's going on today, none of it really makes sense unless there are other forces at work within the FBI and certainly within our intelligence agencies.
But what will these forces be doing, Dr. Stan? That's what I don't understand.
I think that they're allowing this to take place.
Why? I agree with you, but I know what you're saying is right. And in the beginning, I didn't believe that. And I couldn't believe that about why are they doing this? Another thing, let me tell you something else that verifies what you say all the time. I was a newspaper man. I've won newspaper awards up the gazoo. I'm the only Pennsylvania newspaper reporter who won 3 first place Keystone Press awards in 3 different categories in the same year. So I have a lot of contacts with newspaper people throughout the country. I was the editor and publisher of a newspaper. There's a new old newspaper man I know and respect very much from California who was in contact with the smuggler who was transporting aliens over the border, and the smuggler told him about transporting nukes over the border and that he was willing to talk to the FBI. I reported this to Customs. I reported this to several congressmen. I reported this to law enforcement sources. That guy, this is, I'm going back now 9 months. That guy has yet to be contacted. Why?
Well, it's sort of the same thing. The gentleman, one of the original hijackers, 9/11 hijackers, actually defected to the FBI back in April of the year 2000. We actually have the testimony before the Joint Select Committee on that. And he went into the FBI office in Newark, New Jersey, and said, "I'm a hijacker. I was trained in Pakistan, and we're here to. I'm with the team. We're going to hijack your 747s. We're going to crash them," and so they gave him a couple of lie detector tests, determined he was telling the truth, reported him to Washington, D.C. Immediately, Washington had him deported. He was from England, living there, so they sent him back to England. And then after 9/11, he was contacted by some reporters who said, you know, the thing I don't understand, I mean, I turned myself in, I told them the attack was coming, I told them I'd been trained in Pakistan, I've never been asked where the training camp was in Pakistan. Well, I think the only logical explanation is they knew where the training camp was in Pakistan. Why didn't they try to pick up the other hijackers? I think they knew who the other hijackers were. I think we're seeing something being played out which is so evil. Now, because I think there are people who hate America. And the reason we don't close our borders is because they want to do away with American sovereignty. They want to merge us with Mexico. They want to merge us into a one-world government, but they're going to have to destroy America first. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of it, financially, morally, spiritually, and probably eventually the destruction of the whole infrastructure of our nation.
I got to tell you the truth. 2 years ago, I would have said that what you're saying is crazy. It's paranoia.
And paranoid when you imagine people are against
I'm
you.
Now, listen to me. Now, right now, Dr. Stan, I'm speaking to you. I've looked into this as much as any man can. I have a PhD. I know research. I've studied foreign languages for years and years and years. I know how to document things. I know what's true and what's fabricated. What you're saying right now, like things that I would have believed to be crazy 2 years ago, I have to say amen to.
But of course, you can't understand unless you understand the spiritual forces that are energizing these people. That, of course, is.
But why the forces within our government? The things that are very pressing, like this thing in Bakersfield, California, right now, Shukra Jama. The number one FBI said, be on the lookout for it. There's a $5 million reward on his head. I know where he is myself right now. I reported it to the authorities, and as of yet, nothing has been done. I can't, for the life of me, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's sort of like, why can't we find Osama bin Laden? I know of the...
He's in the Valley of Deer, and the Girl Scout troop could find him.
Of course they do, and because I remember there's a congressman in Southern California I've heard talk, and he told me that before 9/11, they knew exactly where Osama bin Laden was, and they reported him, when he was in Afghanistan. They reported him to the government, and the government was not the least bit interested in apprehending Osama bin Laden, despite the fact he declared war on America in 1996. Again, in 1998, he was involved in, the bombing in Aden in 92, and the and the Black Hawk Down incident in 94. And, they knew he hated America, and all of these things were going to come to pass. And they absolutely refused to try to take him out. And you have to ask yourself, why? Because it doesn't make sense logically.
Well, what you're saying is absolutely the truth. Even in the final days of the Clinton administration, the Taliban offered to turn Osama bin Laden over.
And I think that's so important. The Mullah Omar would have turned Osama bin Laden
absolutely.
Over to the United States, and we wouldn't take him. Why?
You're asking the wrong guy, because... That's the question of tonight. Why?
Well, I think that there are powerful spiritual forces at work, and I really believe that they. Many times people do things without ever even understanding them, and I get that from reading material that's put out by certain Luciferian organizations, and I will actually send you a copy of my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, which I simply take what they say and how they're able to control people. who do not even realize they're under control, but will do totally illogical things. So off the air, I'll get that information to you. And I'll put the pitch in for our listeners. Hope they don't want to get this set of pamphlets as well. Let's get back to the possibility that there are nuclear devices here in America. If you set up a couple of nuclear devices in America, you would totally disrupt our economy. Now, there is a plan, and you discuss it in your book, to strike 7 American cities. Would you want to develop that idea?
Well, that idea was discovered from the laptop of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed Akhtar in March of 2003. It was called the American Hiroshima. It's a plan to detonate at least 7 tactical nukes simultaneously. But Bin Laden believes that in our own Qatar, so since we develop nuclear weapons should be used against us. This is the old Islamic idea of parity. And he is showing a minimum of 4 million Americans. He can't do that with a chemical weapon or a biological weapon. He can only do that with nukes.
And that, of course, is reprisal for all the people who were killed in Iraq because of our embargo there?
Well, and because of our invasion of Muslim lands, you know, going back to Somalia and Iraq, of course. He intends to fire in Afghanistan, of course, that invasion, because of the civilians and the soldiers that were these invasions.
And my understanding is, of course, that he has to actually get permission from someone of the Imams or someone who used nuclear weapons against America. When did that come through?
That came through in 2004. There's an imam, I think his name was Mir, and he was a Sunni, naturally Sunni imam in Saudi Arabia. He issued a fatwa to, and this was carried on 60 Minutes, by the way, and by CBS. He issued a fatwa, and in it he said that not 4 million Americans, but 10 million Americans must die for the sake of our sins in the past.
Well, my understanding is that the Muslim law requires that before you attack an enemy, you offer him a truce. And, of course, some people had commented that just a few months ago, or probably within a month or so, why Osama had actually sent a message to President Bush that had offered a truce. Is there any truth to that, they offered a truce before the attack?
Not the Sunnis. You know, if you go through the Sunni Book of Laws and you go through either the Hadith or the Quran, you won't find that. That's a Shia idea. And that's, once again, it brings us back to this idea of the Mahdi. The idea that you have to offer truce before an invasion is a Shia idea. It's not inherent among the Sunnis at all.
And of course, is basically a Sunni.
Oh, yeah.
And yet he seems to be working very closely with the Shias as well, isn't he?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, the leading Al-Qaeda operatives right now are in Iran. I mean, they have Bora, including Osama bin Laden's son.
And I think that really what we're doing is uniting the Sunnis and the Shias now. Certainly, I think that there's probably a lot of problems there in Iraq between the two components. But when you start getting into the Al-Qaeda, it would involve both Shia and Sunni bound together by the common hatred of America?
Do you know, Dr. Stan, Al-Qaeda, the guy who formed Al-Qaeda, his name was Ayyub. Okay, he was the one who came up with the idea. And when Al-Qaeda was formed in Afghanistan, really in Pakistan, at the close of the Afghan War with the Soviets, going back into 1989, when it was formed, there were 4 Egyptians, Zawahiri and company, present. But there were of the others who were present, the 11 others, 5 of them were Iraqis. And guess what they were? They were Kurds. Al-Qaeda right now is operating among the Kurdish faction in Iraq. And the Kurds right now, which is even more remarkable, are the ruling faction. But you're going to find, if you look at Al-Qaeda, and you look at Ayyub, and you find he's a leading factor right now in Iraq. He's the founder of Al-Qaeda.
Well, we're in for some very, very difficult times, and we could go on for another hour, but we're not going to be able to. Our guest this evening is Paul Williams. His books, well, we carried them, The Osama Connection, Osama's Revenge, and The Al-Qaeda Connection. And Paul, hang on just a minute, and then we'll let you go. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let's talk perhaps a little bit about the spiritual aspect of what's going on, because I know I was very pleased to realize that you were coming from an evangelical Christian point of view. How do you see this from the spiritual point of view, devoid of anything logical, because so much of what's going on today really doesn't make sense? How do you look upon it from the spiritual point of view?
Well, Dr. Stan, the only thing that makes sense is if you are a Christian. And you realize that the prophecy, even going back to the prophet Ezekiel and going to Revelation, that in all that come to fruition, including the words of our Lord. You know, it's unbelievable but true that we have seen in our own lifetime the revitalization and renewal of Israel, the emergence of Israel from the ashes. We have seen the emergence of the opposing force and of virulent Islam rising against that. We have seen the signs and of the end times. We see it on a daily basis. And I think the only way it does make sense is if you are a Christian and a believer. And if you are not a Christian and a believer, then my one advice to you is not to buy my books, but to pick up the good book. And to come to terms with Jesus Christ, because he's the only one that can give you salvation from the days that are going to be, that lie ahead for all of us. And he's the only one that can give your life meaning. And at the end of it, guess what? We win. We win because we are victorious and we are assured of that fact as Christians. And my daughter right now is in Washington, D.C., and she's attending school there, and of course, every time I get news of new developments concerning Al-Qaeda, you know, I immediately am very, very concerned about her, but she's a believing Christian, too.
Well, it's all we really can do at this time. Right. We recognize we're involved in the spiritual battle being fought on the political, ideological, cultural battlefield, but also now I'm in the bloodied sands of the Middle East. Paul, thank you so very much, and I'll give you a call and get your address and send you a couple of my something. They're very profound. They're nowhere near as profound as yours are, but they deal with the fact of what's going on and the fact that there really are some secret organizations out there. And since we read their publications and they tell what they're doing, where we're going, why, of course, helps me then to project these ideas to our listeners. So thank you so very much for staying up late at night to be with us. And we'll look forward to talking to you again.
You're a wonderful person, Dr. Good night. I admire you very much.
God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you, too.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm sorry our listeners didn't get a chance to hear our conversation during the break, but Paul is a believing Christian, and his plea was, don't buy my books. Get the Bible and read it through. And it will help you as you read the prophecies of the ancient scribes to realize, of course, that we live in the most amazing times when Israel has been already replaced there and the Holy Land has been gone for almost 2,000 years. And now we see the uniting of the descendants of Ishmael in preparation for a great conflict, which is actually in the process of being played out. So certainly I agree totally. This is a spiritual battle, and it's so important that our listeners understand that. And if you have any questions, you can always call me at our number, and I'll be glad to talk to you. If you're not a Christian, why, you certainly better reconsider what's going on, because we're moving into very, very difficult times. Well, this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we look to you out there to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, and then on a weekend program as well, and by shortwave and internet and by satellite and on radio stations somewhere 5 hours a day, and trying to make people understand that America is at its gravest time in all history. And we are moving rapidly towards a war in the Middle East, How soon? I have no idea. We'll just have to see how the story unfolds. But begin preparing, certainly physically and financially, but mostly spiritually, for the difficult times that lie ahead. So then, of course, we hope many of you would want to get our little pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. The three pamphlets made up of a series of newsletters. Now, you can get them all up on the Internet, and you're welcome to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and pull down on my articles dealing with the occult hierarchy and secret societies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies in America. Not one, but dozens of them here in America and throughout the world. And the premier of Iran, the president of Iran, belongs to an Iranian secret society that believes that you're not going to be able to bring the 12th Imam back, who will be the Mahdi, or who will precede the Mahdi, until there are a catastrophic and total destructive times, and they intend to bring this about. It's the most amazing story. There are all sorts of secret societies out there that most of you have never heard of, but they all have a common denominator, and they all work towards bringing us towards the New World Order, the One World Government, and the New World Religion, and the destruction of Christianity. When you understand the effort against Christianity, there's a conspiracy against Christianity, lots begins to make sense. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to put on the occult hierarchy. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs on the Internet 3 hours a day directly and indirectly on another couple of hours a day. Encourage others to listen to the program. Copy our newsletters. Get them duplicated. Get our videos and DVDs and help us to spread the word. And then pray for America. Pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, God wouldn't bless this nation. And lastly, please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my view, guests. The views of our callers, and of course we welcome across America, at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have on the line Melody Cederstrom, and we're going to be talking about what's happening financially to our society today. Melody, how are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. It's getting a little late back there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's midnight, so I hope I can...
Well, I'm sure you will. You always do. Anyway, really, there's many, many fascinating things going on. We see this last week where Syria has suddenly announced it's going to divest itself of dollars and begin putting its reserve currencies, the reserves that it has to stabilize its currency, into euros. Didn't get much of a play, but I thought that was very interesting. We know that Iran is pulling its money out of Europe and investing it elsewhere because they're anticipating there's going to be a conflict, and of course they don't want to get their money stuck in European banks where they can't get their hands on it. But, you know, you see this market just keeps going up as if everything is great, and yet if you look at our manufacturing, we have lost, almost 2.5 million manufacturing jobs since 2001. And certainly we hear about all the wonderful jobs that the president is producing, but about 1 million of them are new government jobs, and a lot of them are waitress jobs and bartenders and healthcare. We're just not developing the industrial jobs you need to be a great industrial nation. So why is the market going up? And why aren't more people concerned about the progressive undermining of the fundamentals of our currency?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, it all comes back to manipulation. It all comes back to a false sense of security. It all comes back to denial. Back to the disinformation that's provided, all the numbers that we hear that are reported and produced by the administration, none of those numbers come in when we have unusual or unpredictable. They don't include any threatening variables like, you know, any wars that perhaps we were with. We will have something with Iran. France and Germany and Austria are reporting about the bird flu that is spreading. Any terrorist attacks here on American soil, the very things that could do the most damage and markets are not included. And Main Street stays focused to keep the markets propped up. And we also know that of course, with the plunge protection team, there's always funds available in order to place it appropriately to keep the stocks at 11,000.
And because what you're really speaking about is this a government committee that is funded and works with the Treasury and the Federal Reserve Bank and certainly of our major private banks certainly of our stock firms, actually propping up the market and manipulating it. And so often, the market will be in sell-off, and then at the very end of the day, coming out of the Cayman Islands someplace, from unknown accounts comes large buyer orders to prop up the stock market. It's all a matter of perception. It's all a matter of illusion and delusion. Smoke and mirrors over reality. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Melody Cederstrom. The illusion that we've witnessed today, everything seems to be just fine. After all, if you look at the figures, why we have low employment, we have jobs being created, our industries are booming. But unfortunately, a lot of our industries are booming over in China, the largest producer of cars for this last year. And, of course, the car industry in China is booming. The largest producer of cars in China was General Motors. And the United States, General Motors is losing, $1 billion a quarter, is beginning to shut down its facilities. and is beginning to expand in communist China, where it can produce cars for $6,000 and ship those over Asia. American companies are doing great, but they're not doing great here in the United States, with a few exceptions like Boeing and a few of the others. At least for the time being, they're allowed to be productive. Well, Melody, what do you hear from your customers? Are they concerned about what's happening? Certainly, many of them must have been devastated by the massive sell-off in gold and silver and platinum and palladium this last week.
Well, my customers realize it was just a consolidation. When you have something that goes straight up for a period of time, it's going to consolidate, which makes it a stronger, and we realize that it's temporary, and because we are definitely in a bull market in gold, and we are in an uptrend, and that's not going to change. We have a lot of professional buyers in there. We have a little bit of profit taking. So again, you see corrections along the way, and I suspect as we continue with the rise in gold, we will also continue to see corrections at various points. So it's a good thing, and it's also a buying opportunity. So you will have corrections, and perhaps you already have a portfolio. It's always a great time to pick up additional coins. And so my customers are used to it, and they take advantage of the corrections, but we've also had a very strong turnaround time also. We saw gold up today. Gold was up over $7, and we're right back at 547. Silver was up again 22 cents today at 936. And platinum palladium wasn't as strong. We have palladium at 282 and platinum at 1,018. There's a lot of concern out there when I talk to my customers. I hear it. They don't understand what's going on. They know the facts. They know the truth. But they don't understand how the people can accept the illusion that has been given them.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom, who is certainly one of the supporters of Radio Liberty and helps us today bring these programs to you. And Melody was saying that a lot of her customers, they talk to her, and they see what's going on, but they don't quite understand what's going on. In other words, we see these things happening. A lot of them just don't make sense. Would that be a fairly accurate appraisal?
Absolutely. I mean, I have many farmers as clients, and they see the rise in cost. They're struggling, but yet you see these, you know, $500,000 McMansions pop up everywhere with people continue. They can't understand how people can continue the debt. They don't understand how people can continue to pay for the debt. Naturally, people that are in so deep in debt, it's just a matter of time until they can't manage that debt. Just like our government. If you make $2,000 a month and you spend $5,000 a month, it's just a matter of time until you can't juggle the payments anymore. And you will become, you will have to pay your debts. This country has an addiction to debt, and people don't understand debt. As long as they can continue to go and buy, you know, sometimes I think they just don't care. Because they get these little rewards, they get these credit cards. They can go out, they can reward themselves. They have the self gratification, and you know it's a conditioning that has been in the works for many, many years. And it's something that I believe just has to be played out. I don't know when people will get upset. I don't know when people will be upset and say, "Hey, I don't want to be a waitress. I had a great job. I had great benefits. I had a great retirement plan. Now my retirement plan went from, $5,000 a month to $1,500 a month. I'm tired of paying $3 a gallon of gas. I don't know when people will get tired." And,
Well, I really think that a lot of our senior citizens, who've worked their whole lives for the major corporations are a little surprised, because many of the pension funds are underfunded. And certainly I was noticing Delta Airlines, I think $1.8 billion, in their 100 and some $1 billion in the pension fund, but it's at 49% underfunded. And Delta is simply beginning to talk about, well, you know, we'll give you a couple of choices. We can go into bankruptcy and just write off the whole thing, or we'll put $300 million into the into this fund, and you know, and then you give us permission simply to stop funding it in the future if we need to. Well, of course they're going to have to. The aircraft industry is in real terrible problems, just like the automotive industry is in very real problems here in the United States. And it is all because we have done away with our tariffs, because we've allowed this energy crisis to come about. We have not developed our energy resources here. We've become dependent upon the OPEC countries and let them raise the prices up, whereas we have abundant oil. We haven't allowed our companies to drill for it offshore up in Alaska from land. We haven't allowed them to build new refineries. We've done everything we could to force the price of oil up, which is going to end up impoverishing our people. But it's really all about conservation. You really understand there are people who want us to use less energy. And the way you do it is you're up and people are forced to actually curtail their living standards, to turn off their electricity, their air conditioners in the summer, to turn off their heat in the winter. If you understand it's all manipulated, it all makes sense. If you're looking at it logically, you just sort of scratch your head and say, how is that happening? And you look and you see these pictures of these great cities over in China. And every place you look, there are cranes and new buildings being built. Where is China getting all the money to do that? It's coming from American banks, from the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, from the Asian Development Fund, from the Agency for International Development, from you know, great American corporations are shifting their funding over there, as are, of course, European. We have created the great industrial capacity of communist China that is now competing with us and lowering our living standards. And the average American can't understand it's all happening on purpose, but eventually, of course, it's going to result in the destruction of the value of our currency and the impoverishment of our people. And the people who are not making preparations today, I think they're going to be in very real trouble before long, don't you, Melody?
Oh, absolutely. And what amazes me, Dr. Stan, is I don't know if they have been so conditioned not to ask questions. Have they been conditioned to not react to what is happening? Have we been so conditioned that we express any type of concern, or if we question, that is wrong? Have we been conditioned not to do any of this so they can continue to continue with their agenda that they have? And I don't know. It is very difficult anymore to talk to people. I mean, how long have we been told that we're not to discuss religion and politics? Well, those are the two things that we should discuss. But I can remember as a child, those were the two things. Hush, hush, don't talk about it. And, again, it was, you know, something a little silly, but yet so powerful, because these things were not discussed. And when they're not discussed, people don't think. And, there's so much information that is just thrown at people. I don't think they can truly digest it. I think their brains just come open. Extended, and so instead of thinking, they just repeat what they hear. And naturally, what they hear from television or they read from the newspapers. And of course, we know this is all false information. So, and it's really a sad, you know, sad situation. And I guess it's just denial. A lot of people are in denial with what is happening to our country. And you don't hear too many people talk any, you know, the Patriot Act. You don't see a lot of information on the Patriot Act that was extended. But people should be calling all of their local and representatives and telling them and talking to them about the Patriot Act, and you just don't hear it anymore. And it's just kind of like pushed under the rug, and so many of our lives are just gone, and they are. And yet we all just seem to sit by. There's great programs like yourself and Bob Chapman that, you know, try to get the news out, and I help those people that understand what's going on, that can protect themselves against the falling dollar, the devaluation of our currency, and because it's not going to get better, it's only going to get, and systems will purge. We will have one system that will collapse and another one will rise. Things will continue, but they will continue in a different manner than what we're accustomed to.
And I think the important thing for people to understand is there is a master plan.
Yes.
The master plan is called globalism. The leaders of our country, and these are the people from the Council on Foreign Relations, the leadership of that organization are traitors to America. They do not believe in us, our national sovereignty. They want to merge us with the rest of the world. And the, right now, of course, the first step along is to merge us with Mexico, which is why they refuse to enforce the laws, our immigration laws, and or build a fence or stop the immigrants from. They won't even allow policemen who arrest illegal aliens to turn them over to the Immigration and Naturalization Service. We're actively encouraging the invasion of our country. Why? Because eventually they intend to merge the United States and Mexico. The Council on Foreign Relations has put out reports. That's what it's all about. Now, along with this, of course, comes the globalization, the taking down of our tariff barriers, so we can have economic equality throughout the world. Thomas Friedman has written a book called The Earth is Flat. And the whole idea of this is why everything will be the same in all countries. And what about is there will be a common salary. Everybody will get the same salary. We will all be using the similar products. They'll be manufactured not in the United States, but everything is being manufactured for the global market. They're really talking about, and of course they're not going to tell you that. They're going to tell you, oh, but it'll be a little temporary difficulty. The people will lose their jobs, but there are all these new jobs coming up. Yeah, these jobs are going to be street sweepers and working in bars and, you know, and doing gardening work for somebody else. What you're really talking about is impoverishing the American people, or, as I like to say, raising our living standards of that of the Bolivian peasant. As we raise the living standards of the Bolivian peasant just a little ways, but we're going to have to massively lower the living standards of the American people. But they can't tell the American people what they're really up to. We wouldn't put up with it. So they have all this rhetoric, and they write all these books, and they have all these pundits, and they all say, isn't globalization wonderful? And then, of course, they distract us with this war and that war, or this crisis and that crisis, or we debate about the Patriot Act, or we throw our hands up in the world because Dick Cheney accidentally shot somebody, and I don't like Dick Cheney. Why are they making such a big fuss about what happened? Why, very simply, as a distraction, they're playing games with our mind. Do you ever have that feeling, Melody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes I can't believe such a big fuss that they make about certain things. But that's all part of their, and I use the word many times, conditioning. It's the conditioning of the people because it's a distraction. They will be focused while other things are happening and they don't even realize what is happening to them.
And of course the fact that their future is going to be gone. Because, as most people work very hard to accumulate a certain amount of money and then they invest it. They invest it the traditional things, bonds. But unfortunately, you're getting maybe 3 or 4% on your bonds, and you got inflation of 6 or 8% because they're lying about the inflation rate. And are you going to believe your lying eyes? Are you going to believe what you're being told? Look and see what's happened to the price of so many things. Oh yes, the products from China haven't gone up, but look at what so much of the food products here in the United States, and the health and certainly housing until very recently, energy, they're all going up. But there's no inflation in America. Whenever we have inflation, we destroy the value of your savings. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. We're talking about really what's going on in America economically. And I'm going to let you pick it up here for the next few minutes, Melody, until we get back with all of our stations affiliated. So go right ahead.
Okay. I thought you were going to pick it up, but I'll go ahead.
I'll tell you what, I'll pick it up if you don't pick it up, because there's nothing worse than dead air, but why don't you just tell us?
I know, I had some today. But gold is a great investment when it comes to the problems that this country faces. And I always like to be positive. I like to be an optimist. I'd like to think that perhaps some way, somehow, that things are not as bad as they seem. But when you read, and if you only took 10% of the information that is given us, we are in dire straits. And there will come a day of reckoning. You cannot continue on the path that this country is on and not have some sort of fallout that will affect each and one of us. And every time they say inflation is under control, I just want to scream at them, because I don't know about anybody else, but I'm getting really tired of paying these very high prices. Things just continue to rise, from gasoline to the things that we purchase, and I'm tired of buying things from China. They glorify items. If you happen to walk into, like, Target, they have special sections of Asian products, and they glorify it like it's something special. And it just makes me want to, and I couldn't do or say what I'd want, or they'd probably arrest me. And people love it. They fall for it because they think they're getting a good deal. And they don't realize while they think they're getting a good deal, while they think that they're saving a dime, they're actually losing a lot more than that dime that they're saving. And it's really sad. And you listeners out there, sometimes there's a lot of you who don't want to accept what's going on. You don't think it's as bad as what it is. But I'm learning real quick that things are probably worse than what you realize as far as our freedoms and liberties. And the only way that you can protect yourself and be safe is buying the insurance policy, and that is gold. Gold is an insurance policy. It protects you just like home insurance, car insurance, health insurance, life insurance. When things go bad, gold will perform. And we've seen gold perform where it has more than doubled in the past 5 years, and it's trading at the highest in a quarter of a century, because it will respond. A lot of people expect gold to respond immediately to a crisis. Well, usually we'll see an adjustment in gold maybe immediately after a crisis or some information that's released, and then it'll pull back. But gold is a long-term investment. It's the only long-term investment, and you need to balance your portfolio with gold. If people who owned the NASDAQ had 30% of their investments in gold, guess what? They wouldn't be losing money today. They would have been ahead, even though we saw the NASDAQ correct over 50%, because we saw gold go up over 50%. And that's the beauty of gold. It protects you over a period of time. I spoke with someone earlier today. He says, Melody, I don't get it. I've retired, and some of the gentlemen I retired with, they had $300,000.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cedarstrom. She is just talking about a conversation with a gentleman today who's retired, and he said, look, a lot of the fellas I had retired with, pick up the story there.
They had $300,000 in their 401k plan. They lost. They have $50,000. And he's tied gold. You saw what happened to my gold portfolio. I'm fine. But yet you lost $250,000. You're sitting with $50,000 to pull it out and purchase gold with it, even though gold is in the bull market. People can't, once they accept the fact that they have to pull that $50,000, that all they have left out of that $300,000, they have to admit that they'll never get it back. So I think it's just a psychological thing. They'll leave their $50,000 in there, and guess what? They will lose it.
And of course, the thing is that with inflation running at 8 to 9%, do not believe the government figures. They simply lie. And it's sort of like, you remember when we put in the Medicare drug plan, it was going to cost $400 billion over a 10-year period. Before the ink was dry, it was up to $700 billion over a 10-year period. The last estimate was it will be well over $1 trillion. And ladies and gentlemen, this is just a fraction of what it's going to cost. They simply lie. They lie. But the problem is, the reason people can't, you know, take the bull by the horns and invest in gold is because they don't understand the history of money. At one time, people did understand money. And in fact, the thing they'd say about money was it was as good as gold. They've forgotten, of course, that gold was the foundation of our monetary system. They've forgotten that the founding fathers of America said that all coin would be made of gold and silver, and this was to be the basis for our currency. But because they've been dumbed down, because they do not understand the history of money, and of course we do have a wonderful little booklet on this called The History of Money, and it takes it back to ancient Greece and ancient Rome, and what happened at the time that Diocletian, you know, had to impose wage and price controls to try to control inflation, back about 300 A.D. And unless you understand, of course, what the difference in the monetary system between the Eastern and Western segments of the world that were established at that time, you can't understand anything going on today. But they don't teach people that. They honestly believe that that money is, well, a figure that you have in your bank deposit, you know, and you get a statement every month telling how much is there. But every month you lose almost 1% of the purchasing power of that money. And I think it's going to get a lot worse in the near future. They're going to have to try to keep the whole thing intact. They're going to have an inflationary spiral. And then, of course, eventually there'll be a deflation. And the great tragedy is it's happened hundreds of times throughout history. And the people who are indebted lose their property. They lose their farms. They lose their homes. They lose their cars. They lose everything they've worked for. And the value of the currency, their savings lost. Isn't that really, hasn't this happened over and over again?
Yes, it has. And there's always been a segment of people who lose and a segment of people who protect themselves. And we've seen it time and time again. The only ones who prevail through times of adjustment and inflation, people who own gold. And you see gold and diamonds. But money was never backed by diamonds. It was always backed by gold. You have to have something. Value and wealth has to be measured against something. And it can't be paper. And that's exactly what our currency is. It's just plain old paper that has no value. There's no measure of value to anything. And gold has always been that measure of value for 5,000 years. And so, and it won't change because you have to value wealth has to be measured against something. And if it doesn't, therefore, there is no value. And so it is extremely important. And, you know, people believe, people become complacent about inflation. If inflation wasn't going to be such a problem or isn't such a problem today, they wouldn't, the television pundits wouldn't be talking about it on a constant basis and telling everyone how it is under control.
And of course, it really isn't under control. That's the thing.
It isn't.
The government is simply lying about the inflation figures. And I love that old line. I've used it before, and I'll use it again. Are you going to believe the government, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? And remember, of course, with, an 8 to 9% inflation, that means you lose 8 to 9% of everything you've worked all your life for every single year. And certainly the dollar that existed back in 1980 is worth about 25 cents now. The dollar that existed at the turn of the beginning of the 20th century is worth about, a penny is worth about a dollar today. We'll be back in just a moment with Melody. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Melody, don't hesitate to call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Melody, have you noticed any pickup of interest here in the last a month or so, or are things people simply sitting a little on the sideline waiting to see what's going to happen?
Well, business is great, but we do not have that, I guess I'll call it gold fever. Business is great. There's interest, but by no means is the general populace purchasing gold. Perhaps they're listening and they're trying to figure out what's going on, but it's pretty much business as usual. I see larger amounts of funds coming in to the gold, into the precious metal area. And so, but by no means do we have that panic buying, or again, I don't believe we will see the general populace come into the market until gold is, you know, 800, 850. And then they'll propel that to 1500 and then some up to the 2000. And there's predictions anywhere from, you know, 2000, I've seen 5000 and 10000. When we compare gold and we, if you believe we're being globalized and we'll have a currency and we have a an over $8 trillion debt, I guess the sky's the limit for gold. But for now, let's just keep it in something that I can relate to, and that's, you know, 850, 1500, and 2000, and possibly 3000. And so it has a long way to go, but we have professional buyers in there now. And professional traders, and that's fine because they'll take it up to 850. And however, if there's any type of influence, if we have the situation with Iran happen sooner than later, they're often where gold and oil will go. And so it's time to get it now. It's not going to correct any more than what it has. It's where it's at. It's going higher. We're in a major bull market. The trend is up. You'll see little corrections along the way, but you can't focus on day-to-day numbers. You can't focus on what, you know, if you have a little bit of a correction, you can't focus on and say, oh, man, I could have saved $10. You have to look at the long picture and know that it is the safest investment that you can have with the most profit potential. If there's a better
investment. Hold that thought right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Melody Cedarstrom. Melody, how can the people get in touch with you? What's your website? What's your telephone number?
1-800-375-4188. And
give that number a second time. Always have to give it twice.
Okay. 800-375-4188. And thank you for reminding me.
All right.
And the website is Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Everything is spelled out, and it is .net. Discount Gold and Silver Trading .net.
All right, fine. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Melody, give us a call. One of the callers that called in didn't want to come on, but she wanted to know what form that they should buy gold coins, or should they get them through these exchange trade funds? In other words, how should they buy it? Should they get gold? They would hold themselves. Should they buy gold through an ETF? What?
Absolutely not. In the time that we're heading, the things that will be approaching us, take possession of your gold and don't allow anyone to talk you out of it. Stay away from these electronic funds. Stay away from e-gold. Stay away from this Liberty Silver and gold. Buy it. Take it. Be sensible. It's common sense. Gold is the most simplest form of investing. It's not complicated. But you have to learn about the different coins, how they perform, why you should buy them, and then you will know what to put in your portfolio. Everyone is different. There isn't a one coin fits all, but you have to learn the different coins. A lot of dealers just want to sell the coin that makes them the highest commission. And we do things a little bit differently. I talk to my customers. I educate you. A lot of dealers, they don't want to be teachers. They just want to say, this is what you should have, this is why, blah, 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 and that's it, and you go along with it. So always take possession of your gold. I know there's many different plans out there and different firms that want to hold your gold. A lot of plans out there, if you send me a little bit this month, over a quarter period of time, then we'll send you the coins. Don't do it. You're old enough, you're mature enough to take possession and handle your own money. And gold is money. So that is the best way to do it. So always take possession of your gold.
All right. Well, now, what about the exchange trading funds? Are they actually buying up gold and so that there's not so much gold available on the market?
Well, they report what they buy, but there is no auditing. So you really don't know if they're buying it or not. You know, same way with a lot of these places that tell you they're going to hold your product. You don't know if they're buying. Likely, they're speculating and buying paper. They're buying contracts.
In other words, they're buying like derivatives. Somebody else is guaranteeing it. But of course, if they you're really out of luck. Is the same thing happening with silver? What about these silver exchange trading funds that they keep talking about?
Take possession of it. It's paper that you're buying. That's the importance of gold. It's real. You want it in your hands. You don't want to buy another contract. That's just paper. You don't know what happened to those records. You don't know if they're buying the gold. You don't know if you'll ever get your money out of there. We're going through some serious times, and you need to protect yourself. Gold is money, and that is why you have to take possession. Even your silver, take possession of it. Don't play the market. Don't trade the market. Don't speculate the market. Don't buy contracts. Don't buy e-gold and Liberty dollars. Make an investment. That's what will protect your purchasing power and nothing else.
All right, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If Melody, go ahead, give us a call now. What type of bullion coins do you recommend, or do you recommend bullion coins?
I recommend bullion coins if someone is looking for a short-term investment, if they're looking, if they have a larger amount of funds available, I will suggest that they get at least half of it in bullion coins, because I believe if there's some sort of emergency and you need to sell your coins, that is what you would want to sell, is your bullion coins. There's a lot of debate going on about what is considered bullion. You hear that one minute you hear foreign gold is collectible. Well, they're not. They're bullion coins. I have a couple of pet peeves. One of my pet peeves are the $20 gold pieces that are sold in extra fine condition. They're pretty much bullion coins. And in fact, I had some notes here on some extra fine comparisons that I did. Let's see if I can find them here. I know dead air is a bad thing.
They're basically what the coin industry has done is to develop this system by which they grade coins, and it has to do with scratches on them, and of course a freshly minted coin be entirely smooth, and then of course one or two scratches you become an MS-18, and then MS-68, 64, 66, 62. Anyway, these are fancy names they give to them. Then they put them in a container and they put a rating on it. And this is an MS-62, this is an MS-64, MS-66, and each one has more in the way of value. But they're only of value for the collector. They have no more value as far as the actual gold in them. But of course, it's as with anything else, if you can get people to pay it, of course, people are going to buy them. But if push comes to shove, what's going to happen to the value of them? Now, some people, and I know Bob Chapman, thinks that this is a good way to go, that if you get a specialized date or a quality, why these coins have a great upside potential. I don't know. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I think they do. And there are a lot of negative comments out there on the higher grade coins. And they got such a bad reputation is that dealers were selling the wrong coin to the wrong people at the wrong price and at the wrong time. They were selling high grade rare coins to people that should not have purchased them with high commissions during a downtrend in gold. And yes, they performed horribly and people didn't deserve to own them. There's nothing wrong with being a collector, but the majority of my clients are not collectors. They are investors, and their main goal is to protect their purchasing power. There's nothing wrong with buying graded coins. They give you a guarantee that circulated coins do not. And for the small spread, I mean, when you have the mint state coin starting out at MS-60 to 7, and you compare an extra fine condition Liberty to like an MS-61 graded coin, you're looking at a $54 difference. And in the Saints, there's only a $40 difference between an extra fine coin and a certified graded coin. And the benefits for that certified graded coin is so much greater than the you have to spend. And so, you're foolishly not you're foolishly wasting $40 for not buying an MS-61 versus an extra fine coin. And that spread is nothing. But the key thing is, when you go to sell back these extra fine coins, they only sell back the wholesale bid price for an extra fine Liberty coin is $565. If you were to sell back a 1 ounce Gold Eagle today, sale bid price is $562. There's a $3 difference. $3 higher than a bullion coin. So you're better off buying a Gold Eagle when you only have a $3 greater bid than a bullion coin. The St. Gaudens in extra fine condition sells back at a little more. That sells back at $23 over the Gold Eagle coin. But still, not a lot of difference.
No, because the St. Gaudens, these were minted before 1932?
Right, to 1907. Back in the year 2000, we did a comparison of 20-year high and low bid prices, and I was just going through some of my records today. In January of 1980, the AU coins reached a wholesale bid high of $878. Gold hit $850. Not a whole lot of difference. So your extra fine coins, your AU coins, they do not perform better. They do not outperform graded coins. Circulated coins should be bought as an alternative to bullion, as an alternative to graded coins. And then we run into another problem. If you can't sell your coins, the extra fines, back to the person who you purchased them from, guess what? You will rarely ever get the proper price, or you get the proper grade when you go to sell back. Now, if you get someone who's honest like myself, you might. But the people who buy these extra fine coins, they don't have a clue as to what they're purchasing. They can't tell the difference between a VS, an XF, and an AU. And it will work against them when they go to sell these coins. If they buy AUs, most likely you're going to get a VF price. So if you're going to buy circulated coins, heck, you may as well buy the VF coins to begin with and save yourself a couple of extra dollars, because it's going to be your word against the dealers. And so if you have to go into a corner and you can't sell it back to the person you bought them for, guess what? You're not going to get the grade that you bought. That's why it's important to pay that extra $40 or that extra $54 and get yourself a graded coin, because then you can call me and say, Melody, I have an MS-61 $20 Liberty I want to sell. I can say, well, that's great. The bid price on that is this. And that is a lot different than saying, Melody, I have an extra fine coin. Well, I need to see it first.
Sure. And so there's so much in this that the average person really doesn't know. And, the average person has no idea the grading. This is why you've got to have somebody who really knows it and will stand behind it.
Well, sure. So paying that small spread to a certified coin, it's certainly worth it. And the coins that are graded will outperform. The extra fine coins, there's people out there saying, well, those are the only coins that are going up. Well, yeah, they're going up at the spot price of bullion. It isn't because of demand. It's because of the spot price of gold, because there's no extra premium built in to a circulated gold coin. The only time it's good to buy a circulated coin, like if you take the $5 Indian, there is over a $200 spread between an extra fine Indian and an MS-61 $5 Indian. Well, a $200 spread, to me, that's significant. It's not $40 and $50. So there's nothing wrong with buying that type of coin if you want an Indian and you don't want to pay that big spread. You still have the problem when you go to sell it, but because of the price and you're going down in fractions, you're still saving more money that might be worth it. And so that's how you have to look at the different coins. That's how you have to look at the fractional pieces. Most of your numismatic coins, they will lag the rise in bullion. Because you got to remember, and I'm not talking rare coins. They will lag the rise in bullion because they go by supply and demand. You need to have that gold fever. And we have it periodically. I can take this past year in 2005, I can take different years where some of the higher grade coins performed over bullion, performed better than the 61. Anybody can take different dates and prices, and I always prices, so no one can say that the prices are adjusted by commissions. So I always use wholesale prices, and I can show how a lot of coins at a certain period of times performed. This will continue, but you have to have that separate market. Is it for everyone? No, it's not for everyone. But bullion is a great, that's why you have to diversify, know what the coins do, and know the truth about them. A lot of these extra fine coins are sold as non-confiscatable because people really do want to protect themselves against confiscation. So they don't want to buy bullion. But guess what? These extra fine coins, they do sell at a higher premium than gold bullion. But when your value of a coin is pretty much based on bullion, I can't imagine there's a lot of numismatic value that would protect anyone from confiscation.
What the government would do, I mean, governments are totally irrational. I mean, government, by its very essence, is corruption, and when it's trying to stabilize itself so it can continue paying the salaries of the politicians and their pensions, they don't care about the rights of the people. And we've seen down throughout history where first they simply taken away the wealth of the people. In fact, that's exactly what Alan Greenspan said in his famous 1966 article, that gold is a means of protecting your wealth, and the reason they don't want you to have wealth, gold, is because they don't want you to have wealth. And if there was some other means of protecting your wealth, they would make that illegal as well. And that's the real element of where we are today.
Well, I don't debate confiscation. I believe it's there. I believe you're right. They can do anything they want. But I also believe that when you're looking to make particularly large purchases, you can look at the past and see what they've done. And they did allow collectible coins to be owned. And you have to ask yourself, why do they still allow? Why is that loophole still there? Because I'll guarantee you the people in power own gold. And I'll guarantee you they're not going to write laws to where they have to give their gold back. Is that a for sure thing? No, nothing's for sure in the future, particularly the future that... But to me, I agree with you, Dr. Stan. Gold is something you need to protect your wealth, to protect your purchasing power. Confiscation is a secondary item, but it is important. And I do need that. That's why diversification is important. But you have to diversify into the right coins.
Yeah, I think that, ladies and gentlemen, we live in very, very uncertain times. We have unscrupulous people working behind the scenes. Their goal is a one-world government, a new world religion, and it's important that people begin making preparations. America we grew up in, it ceased to exist long ago. We've changed our values, we've changed our morality. Both political parties, this idea of globalization and the destruction of the sovereignty of our country, which is why they're not trying to seal our borders, which is why we have our troops stationed all over the world, our leaders, both political parties, dedicated to a new world order and a new world religion. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Melody, you got three minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, I'm just going to make a final comment on confiscation. You know, back in 1933, everyone owned gold. Everyone. Today, only a small amount of people own gold. But the people who do own gold today, they're very conservative. They really know what's going on. And to me, I think gold in their hands make them, I'm not going to say dangerous, but makes them an adversary of the globalists. And so for taking it away from those people that understand what's going on, I do believe that they will confiscate, and I do believe there will be a world currency. And so I do believe you do have to protect yourself, whether you give it back, whether you keep it, that's your business. But I always figure if you can protect yourself, at least plan for something that could happen, then at least you're partially protected for when it does happen. And 1-800-375-4188. And I'd be more than happy if you have portfolios already. I'll look at what you have. If you need to make adjustments or add or maybe change things around, I'm not an advocate of trading anything. You should never sell your gold for any investments, whether it be currencies. It's another pet peeve. You don't trade out good coins for lower grade coins. You keep what you have, and if you have to do anything, you add to your portfolio to make the adjustments. And only if you do trade, it should be in very unique circumstance where you've made profits on your coins and work up. You want to better your portfolio, because in an investment is where you want to increase your holdings. And so you should always keep that in mind. That's what an investment is. So if you'd like help with your portfolio, call me at 1-800-375-4188. You can go to my website. Most of the information that I mail out is on the website, and that website is Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Everything is spelled out, and that is .net, Discount Gold and Silver Trading .net. If you'd like to email me, you can do that also at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
Well, I think we live in very, very unusual and really very, very dangerous times. I don't think there's any time that I've been following things for the last 46 years when I've had a feeling that we were in as serious straits as we are right now. Well, Melody, one more time before we let you go, will you put out your telephone number and your website one more last time?
Yes, sir. 1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
That's 800-375-4188. Good night, Melody. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Good night, Dr. Stan.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right, fine. That was Melody Cedarstrom. We're simply talking about getting prepared for the difficult financial times that lay ahead as our globalist leaders continue transferring American manufacturing, American jobs, America's wealth throughout the rest of the world. Keep raising the prices of energy, keep raising the prices of so many things here, and the ultimate plan is to make a flat earth. We will all be impoverished, and that so that we, of course, will raise our living standards to that of the Bolivian peasant. They know exactly what they're doing. Of course, we will have a two-class society. We will have the government officials and the elite, the very, very wealthy, and then everybody else will be impoverished. Read Plato's Republic. This is what it's all about. That is the master plan for what's going on today, where you have an elite, educated ruling class, the oligarchy, and then, of course, everybody else impoverished. But remember, in this system, there is to be one world ruler. And I wonder who that... Well, ladies and gentlemen, Plato's Republic, must reading for everybody before we're together again. And then, of course, we hope many of you will go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We do have a DVD. It's called The Coming Financial Crisis. We have a pamphlet called The History of Money, which really give you tremendous insight into the background of our monetary system and what you must do to begin to prepare yourself so that you will not be destroyed, as will the vast majority of the people in this country. Unfortunately, we live in perilous times. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you haven't read my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, it's three pamphlets. It just comprises a number of letters we've written through the years, and, of course, letters written by good friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy, taking you into the secret societies. People say secret societies. There aren't any secret societies. There aren't. Well, I think you might be surprised. We do carry a book written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, called Fire in the Minds of Men. In fact, the president in his last inaugural speech earlier in 2005 referred to fire in the minds of men. It's a phrase that was used by Dostoevsky in one of his most famous novels. But the book Fire in the Minds of Men, written by James H. Billington, is the story of the secret societies and the revolutionary movement that began with the American Revolution in 1776 and concluded, at least as far as the story, with the Cuban Revolution in 1959. But ladies and gentlemen, the revolution continues going on today. The new countries are certainly being overthrown all throughout the world. There's a revolution taking place in Nepal today, revolutionary movements in Colombia, revolutionary movements in a dozen countries throughout the world. And, of course, we're out of time. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today.